everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and I am back with an author spotlight, and I am super excited to welcome author Kay Bromberg. Welcome to the podcast. We're super excited to have you. So I'm going to read your bio, and then we'll get into kind of chit-chat to get to know you, and then we're going to talk about your new release, Twisted Night, book one, because I have questions. I have questions.
Lots of people do.
Kay Bromberg is a New York Times best-selling author who writes contemporary romance with a mix of sweet, emotional, and steamy elements, featuring strong heroines and complex heroes. Since her debut in 2013, she has sold over 2 million books worldwide, and her Driven trilogy was adapted to passion flicks. When not writing, she balances motherhood with plotting her next hero. It has to be hard to find balance to write and to have children.
There is no balance.
Yeah, because you just have to work on the fly sometimes.
Always. Like right now, I'm sitting in my car during volleyball practice for my 14-year-old.
It's always interesting to me because, you know, being an author, it's not a 9-to-5 job. I mean, I know that you can set like writing hours and be disciplined, but sometimes an idea strikes you.
Yeah, I think after 12 years, my husband's given up on the fact that I'm not going to have a 9-to-5. Like, he's always like, can't you just set hours? And it's like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Well, and I find, so when I first came into this, you know, reading was an escape to get away from like doing household chores, like laundry and dishes. Sorry, I can't. I'm reading. And now that books have become my part of my job, I find I'll do dishes to avoid a proofreading.
Yes. So much so, yeah. I'm like, I have to do laundry, no problem. Even though I hate laundry.
And who cares if you didn't write those three chapters that your editor is like, I need.
Yeah, like I have a book due on Monday and I'm only at 10,000 words. So yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I guess we know what you're doing this week.
Yep.
It always makes it interesting. So let's get to know you a little bit as an author. You've been writing since 2013. Were you always a romance reader, or was there something at that point that you were like, I want to try this?
I've always read romance. I grew up, I was a Sydney Sheldon girl growing up, so not so much romance back then, but then Nora Roberts, that type of thing. And, you know, I had three kids. They were under the age of 5, and I was kind of sick of watching TV at nighttime when they fell asleep. And my husband went to Costco and bought me the Twilight series, the box set of it. And I was like, okay, I'll read this. And at first I was like, I don't want to read about vampires, you know, that type of thing. And then it was like, then I wouldn't put him down. And then my mom called me and she's like, you need to meet this guy named Christian Grey. And so then we kind of went from there, and I was watching all these other authors who were, you know, everyday people at that find success writing. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to try this just to not be bored at nighttime. And then my first series out the gate did really well. So
yeah,
12 years later and 40 books. Yeah.
It's really interesting that 50 Shades was such a pivotal moment for so many authors. Yes. And people, but really it even goes back farther than that to those Twilight books, because we wouldn't have 50 Shades without
Correct. And it goes back to having e-readers, because people weren't embarrassed about the covers and they could read it anywhere. And then there was this, not sexual awakening, but there was an awakening among older women, and not just, you know, the young kids who, I say young kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like, hey, it's okay to read this. And the guy next to me who's reading, like, you know, what is it, like, you know, Chicken Soup for the Soul, doesn't know that I'm sitting here reading something else that he, right, you know. So for me, it just kind of came at a time, and it was more of a challenge to myself. I went to college, but I've never taken a writing class. And so I just wrote what I like to read.
Yeah. And I do think you're right. I think that the fact that 50 Shades came out with the dawning of e-readers and the iPad, it was the perfect storm,
correct,
to make that series. People checked it out.
Yes. And because Erica, you know, was in the television industry, as a background, she was able to get, not that the book didn't do phenomenal, but she was able to get different access to different doors than a lot of us have had at the time. And so it became a phenomenon. It became all over TV. It came, I should watch how I say that.
We know what you're
Sorry,
saying. You're
pun
fine.
intended. It was all over TV, and then it kind of became like this cultural phenomenon that just we saw everywhere, and then it kind of, a lot of us were like, hey, I think maybe we can do that.
Yeah. I think they're, and everybody has a critique of that book. It wasn't as well written as they wanted, blah, blah, blah.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because there's something in that book that made it commercial success that we hadn't seen before. Now, I've always been a romance reader as a young adult. I picked up romance because that's what my mom read, right? And she had the traveling paper sack of
Of
romance
course.
books that went house to house. And
Fabio on the cover.
yeah, oh, tons of Fabio. I read lots of Harlequin, red covers. I remember the first time I met my husband's grandmother. She's like 82, 80 or 82. And she's like, here, I have some Harlequins. Would you like them? And I'm like, whoa. And she was not reading the closed door Harlequin red book. She was reading like Desire and Silhouette. And
Awesome.
I was like, okay, you go, Grandma. And so to me, like something like 50 Shades wasn't shocking, but what I have loved that came out of it, and everyone calls it the golden age of independent publishing. And I think what I love that came out of it, though, was the exploration that we had in different character dynamics. It isn't even so much the sexual awakening, but if I look at like your Driven series that you wrote, you gave us different characters. We had all these different complex heroes and heroines that weren't typical.
It was depth.
Yeah, there was no damsels in distress in a traditional way. It was different.
Yeah. It was kind of this moment in romance history where rules were thrown out the window. It used to be romance had to be written where at 30% this happened, at 40% this happened, there had to be the third act breakup, there had to be the, and it kind of was a moment in time when, because publishers weren't running it and we were, as independent authors, we kind of just threw rules out the window and went for it. And I'm reading Jodi Ellen Malpas and I'm like, wow, it's like a, this man, the Lord has like a, how do I, a sex club. And, like there was just all these different things that were like not normal and it was cool. And so then the more we read, the more we learned. And then we kind of fed off each other with these characters that were complex, and it was okay for them to be damaged, and it was okay to explore that damage in a real way, without the rules of a publishing industry telling us what we could and couldn't do.
Right. And you weren't locked in that it had to be exactly 250 pages, or, you weren't told that, things, like you said, it didn't have to have the stereotypical first kiss or, and
Yeah.
if you look at industry past, in the past, we had had authors and publishers like Barbara Cartwright, who put very clear rules on romance when she, was kind of reigning in the 60s and 70s. And I think that we were still seeing that in the 80s and the
Yes,
90s.
definitely.
And it
Very
wasn't
formulaic.
very formulaic, and nobody had sex until they were married. And it was alluded to, but not on page.
Correct.
And, then this like 2010, it felt like this awakening in romance. And it wasn't the traditional bodice rippers, right?
Definitely not.
It was contemporary. And so when you came in 2010, it was still a lot more third person in writing,
Yes, which I don't write,
which
so.
you don't write. And at the indie movement really pushed forward this first person
Yes.
accounting. And to me, I think that's one of the best things that came out of indie publishing is the push forward to the first person accounting.
It's a catch 22, though, as an author, because third person allowed you to kind of step back, and first person, you're in their shoes, which I love. I love to know what they're thinking. I'd love to know their thought process. But as a female writing a female, you have to be very careful with that because the female character can come off as wishy-washy because you are reading her thoughts and you are understanding the question she's asking herself and should I, shouldn't I? But then you see how she actually portrays herself, like towards the hero. So I used to get a lot of, and I used to care very much about this, and now not so much. Oh, your character seems wishy-washy. And I'm thinking, are you thinking because of, are you saying that because of what you thought, what she was saying in her thoughts, or because what she was saying outward? And then once people realized that, they were like, oh, like I'm hearing thoughts, but I'm not hearing her say that. Whereas the hero could say whatever, and it was like, well, we still love him.
Yeah. Well, there definitely is a double standard to the male characters, to the female characters, and
Always.
I think that's something that started to kind of snowball in 2019 and in 2020. We seem to let the females have a bigger voice to come
Strength and
out.
power.
Yeah,
Yeah.
show their power, show their feminine side, but also that they are in control and can be in charge.
And that's not bitchy either, because
Right.
it used to be, God, your heroines are too strong. And I'm like, wow, I'm strong. Like, I'm not gonna let someone walk all over me, but I can still be sexy and I can still want to be taken care of. But that man does not make me, you
Yeah.
know, like that's a very defiant aspect of the heroines that I love nowadays.
I love it too. And actually, I really seek out the unlikable heroines. Like, I'll read a review and someone will say, "Oh my God, this heroine, I just really couldn't like her. She just wasn't." And I'm like, "Give me the bitchiness." Because
Yeah,
actually,
challenge accepted. Yeah, I
yeah.
give. Let me prove to you why you're gonna like her.
Well, and in Twisted Knight, we have Rowan.
Yes.
And Rowan, she has her moments where she absolutely does come off a little bit like, I don't want to say that she's weak. She is just stuck and doesn't know how to get out. And how many of us can relate
Yes.
to that, right?
Yep. In one aspect or another. Yeah.
You get pigeonholed into a certain place in your life and you don't know what steps to take. But when she has finally had a freak enough, she's had a freak enough. And she tells all of them,
Yeah,
you
and
can't.
more's coming.
I cannot wait. So tell me, so you mentioned like third act breakup, and I always like to ask because now this book, Twisted Knight, ends on a cliffhanger. It is book one in a trilogy.
Yes, we'll make sure we know that. Yes.
Very clear that we know that. I had a very big emotional response at the end of this book. Like,
Yay.
I was like,
Mission accomplished, you know.
I'm like, what the
What?
fuck? What just happened here? Because again, I didn't know it was a trilogy when I finished it. And I'm like,
Wow.
cheese and rice. I didn't call you any names, but I might have threatened to throw my phone at a moment because I
That's
got
okay.
to
You can
listen to
call
the
me names.
audiobook. I was like, what? And the way it ends, seriously, ma'am. Ma'am.
You're welcome.
Anyway, but what do
But I
you
did my job. I
you
created
did.
visceral reaction, and that is the, I think to me that is the job of an author, is to make you feel good, bad, ugly, and indifferent, so, or not indifferent. So yeah.
Oh, my emotions ran the gamut on this book. Like,
That's a
I
fun
was
book to
just
write.
chucking along and I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm emotionally attached to the hero Holden. And then we get Rowan and I'm like, okay, I see her. I see where she's having issues. I hate her mother. I hate her
And then you get
brother.
the server room.
And then you get the server room and I'm like, well, hello, sir. And the visits on the doorsteps, and then you're creating this whole other emotion with some flashbacks. And then I got to the end and I'm like, what the fuck just happened to me?
How do we get there?
And it's definitely one of those that I think I will absolutely reread and re-listen because I know that I didn't absorb everything because you gave.
You have to try and pick things out to see what I'm going to pull on.
Yeah,
Yes.
you gave so much. But so what I was going to ask you is, do you think a romance needs like that third act breakup? Not necessarily a third act breakup, but that high emotional peak in the story that puts the relationship to test. And it can be an outside force. It can
Yes.
be a miscommunication, but do you think it needs that? Or can we have, like, the trend right now is the emotions that they kind of just vibe along and things are just always seem to be great. And I struggle with those.
So to me, I think you can have your romance however you want it. Like that's the best part about romance is you can, there is a million books out there and you can find what floats your boat and you, what fits, what makes you happy. For me personally, writing a book where there is no tension and there it's just like they meet and then it's peaceful and they, oh, they have a little fight over, who puts ketchup on a hot dog. Like, that's not it for me. Like, I like being invested in my characters. I like a little bit of real in there so that you feel attached and so you feel those emotions. And then I like kind of twisting those emotions so that you're like, whoa, I don't know if I really like you anymore, but I'm still want to know what's going to happen. I haven't written a cliffhanger in probably 6 years. So for me, that was fun. I like building you up as an, like on the author side of it, I like building you up and then making you go, what just happened? But at the same time, as a reader, I like that feeling too. I like the journey and to be able to, like when Bramble approached me to and asked me, they said they wanted an old school, like Sylvia Day Crossfire series-esque series. And they asked me if I would like work with them on, a concept and writing it. And then it was like, ooh, I get to fall back in love with my characters again because we're writing so fast right now. And a lot of people are into the standalones, which I love, but when you're taking a writing a book in a month, you don't get to fall as in love with them and be as intricate and as detailed. And I think as much as I will say that every book I put out, I stand behind, there's something about trilogies or duets where you get to spend more time with your characters and you get to invest that emotion that you can see it more on the page as a reader that the author is there.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. I absolutely, and I have zero problem. Like I said, trilogies are fine. And I know people, and to be honest, I'd rather have a trilogy of 300 pages, three books of 300 pages, than giving me a fast 500-page book.
Yeah.
Because you left me at a point that I have to be like, okay. And now I'm waiting for that book, but I'm not, if a book is 500 pages, sometimes I get to page 400 and I'm like,
Why are we still here?
do I really need all of this? Like, what else are we gonna
So
give
a funny
me?
thing is I just finished book two and book one was long. I was kind of given like you write what however long you need it to be to build that tension. And so then I just finished book two and it was like because I got had so much time with these characters and I've had a year to sit on it and think about it, I got this idea that it was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. Well, in my head I'm saying that. And I'm like total twist I never saw coming when I thought of this series. So there's a major twist coming because my biggest thing was it's a trilogy. I hate when second books are complete fluff. Like I need story, I need plot, I need something like why are we doing like what's going on here? So I definitely don't like fluff. So you get three complete stories in this series, and I'm so jonesing to write the third book now because of the plot twist I've thought of.
Oh, I'm so excited. I cannot wait for book two. Because you gave us twists, and I have to commend you because there was so much. This book read really fast, and you're like, oh, it was a really long book. I don't even know how many pages it was. I did the audio. I was invested. These characters,
That's good.
their banter, it didn't feel long. And I am desperate for book two. And now you're telling me there's a twist. Like, hello, sign me up already. Because I love that, and that's
That's why we
something,
read.
right? I want
That's why we
those.
read. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's funny because I think of the books of yours that I've read, and I love your racing books. And we just did an episode where we talked a lot about Formula One race car romances. And of course, we're like, oh, Kay Bromberg, she's got lots and lots. But I think that's one of the things that I go back to your books for, is I always know that I'm gonna get the emotion. I'm gonna get those connections. And those books are gonna provide some depth for me. So shout out to
Well,
you
thank you. That's
for doing
that's a
that.
huge compliment because to me, it's like I want readers to finish a book and to still be thinking about it. Yeah, I know they're going to move on, but there's going to be something that's going to be like, oh, God, I can't keep thinking about that. So for me, that's my point. That's my goal in every book.
Well, I will tell you, like, I finished Twisted Night. I immediately went on to NetGalley just to see if they had like posted any
For the next one.
for even like a prologue or a teaser for the next one in the book, and they didn't.
No, because I was so took forever to write the second one. I kept going, can I get another extension and then another one? And then finally I was like, okay, here, just take it.
Just take it. Well, and then my contact at Bramble, I sent her an email and I'm like, hey, friend, do we know? And she's like, no, but I will email you as soon, I will
Yes.
email you that widget as soon as things are
Yes,
ready.
we're
And I'm
doing
like,
cover concepts. We have all that going on. So
okay,
we're
it's okay. I'll be
Yes.
okay.
Yes. Threaded Lies is the next one.
Ooh. So Twisted Night, it comes out, this episode is going to release on your release day, so September
Okay, cool.
24th of 2024. So you can get this book wherever you buy books. It is available. It'll be available in paperback, ebook, and audio. I did the audio. It was very, very well done. The audio was
Yay.
very well done. And I didn't write his name down, but the gentleman that does the voice narration, he gives a
Patrick.
ton of emotion in the book,
Yeah.
like crying. And I felt like he was crying. Like it was very
Real,
well done.
realistic.
Yeah, incredibly well done. Our heroine's name is Rowan Rothschild. She is an heiress. Her family's trash, guys. I'm gonna be really honest. I got no love for that family.
It's like Succession in the Murdoch family combined.
It was. Yes, lots of Murdoch family vibes. Yes. It's a billionaire workplace, high society, revenge, hate to love, a little bit of deception trope in this romance, which deception
I'm
can
all
be
for that.
hard. Deception can be hard to pull off where a reader will walk away and be like, I understand it. And this book is messy, but not in a way that you're like, oh, that was messy. You're like, oh, this is messy. I need to watch more of this or read more of this. The deception here, it works, and it works so well. And I wasn't mad at anybody for the deception. I wasn't mad at anybody. I just needed to know more.
Okay, I like that. I can take that answer.
But so is deception hard to write?
I don't think I purposely have to. I don't think I purposely have to think about it.
Okay.
Like I just think because I've sat with the characters for so long, it's there. But yeah, I do think because you want to pull it off. You're trying to not shock value for the reader, but be like, what? What just happened? So I mean, it's. I like to put a, how do I say? When I write plots, I like to have a lot of threads to pull from.
Yeah.
So in this book, there are a lot of threads because once it's published, I can't fix it like in indie books. Like if I messed up in an indie book, I could go back and change it and republish it. So this I cannot. And book three, it may be a year and a half before it comes out. And so I have to have enough threads to pull in case I paint myself in a corner for a plot that I can pull on one of those.
Fair.
So, you know, there are some things that are there that like maybe at the end you're gonna be like, but how come she never used that? Well, that's because that was one of those things I put in there just in case.
Just in case you needed it later. It's smart to have an exit strategy because I didn't think about
Always.
that. I didn't th You could write yourself right into a corner and there's no way to go back and
I did
re-edit.
that with a Montlake series. I did Resist and Reveal. It's kind of the same. It's a twisty, complicated. She's a madam, he's a high-powered divorce attorney, and there's a dirty senator and I wrote and finished the first book and it published. And then I realized, holy crap, I painted myself in a complete corner with that ending. And then, because the first chapter in the next book was the last chapter that was in her point of view, was in his point of view. And so I was trying to figure out, like, how do I fix this? So yeah, I've learned to put a bunch of plot threads in there so that I can pull on it later just in case.
So smart. I do like the high society vibes, and it's interesting you say the Murdoch family because in Succession, because absolutely you have this powerful family with these high expectations,
They're
but
a little corrupt, you think, perhaps?
a lot corrupt it feels like.
I mean, you know.
Maybe. But you feel like for Rowan, she's been put into this role and in a box that she never wanted. And
No.
it doesn't fit her. And she's not afraid to try to break the glass as much as she can.
But as a female, don't we all feel that way in one aspect or
Yeah.
another? Like I'm at high school. I'm so and so's mom, and it's like most people have no idea what I do for a living. And so it's one of those things. It's like we're all put in these boxes by people in society, and it doesn't matter where we live. There's something in that society that we are in that we're pigeonholed there. And sometimes you're just like, do you know, like, not, it's not like a, do you know who I am? But it's like, oh my gosh, do you know what I used to do? Or do you know that this is what I do on the side? Or I'm just so much more than X, Y, and Z. So for me, that's how she is. It's exacerbated clearly because I need it to be for the book. But I feel like every woman at some point can conform to that or can understand that feeling. Like, my husband and I both work, but because I work at home, I'm the one who takes care of birthday parties and soccer practices and football practices. And it's like, wait a minute, like I'm just as busy as you are, but because I'm the woman, that's my expectation. And sometimes I'm like, hold, buddy, get in the car and drive.
No, I get that. I was a stay-at-home mom, but not a stay-at-home mom by choice. I had a medically fragile child. And again, I was the one that did everything, and I'm the one they called. And then in 2018, when I went back to work, working in publishing and stuff, it became a situation where he had to step up and like cooking dinner. I didn't like cooking dinner. I never liked cooking dinner.
Likes to cook. Well, sorry, no, I don't like to cook dinner, but I won't speak for everyone.
But he stepped up and he started cooking. And, so it's like when the time was right, he was able to step in. But those moments, you're right, people don't know what you do. And I always love that when people find out what I do or like that I have the podcast and they're like, oh, I read Nicholas Sparks. I'm like, Jesus, Joseph and
Yeah, it's like,
Mary,
oh, here we go. Yeah.
please go away.
But I also think it's part of the society that we grow up in. Like, my husband's more than willing to help, but me having to ask for that, like, it's like, well, no, that's my job. No, it's not my job. Like, he's like, well, tell me what you want me to do, because no matter what I do, I can't even put the groceries away right without you freaking out. And I'm like I'm thinking right now, he's putting groceries away at home. He went shopping on the way home, and I'm like, yeah, I know I'm gonna go home and have to rearrange things when he goes to bed, so it's in my way.
I
Yes,
get
folks, I am anal. There's a reason my plots are so twisty.
it. I get it. Nope, I get it. And it's nice, and that's part of the reason I think I read romance is the women can ask for things and the response isn't, well, you just had to tell me,
Yeah.
you get more than just, well, I don't know why you're mad. Well, this is why I'm mad. And he's like, oh, okay.
How can I fix that, my dear? No.
Sometimes we don't get that in real
Yeah.
life.
And it's not because we don't love our spouses or our
No.
significant others. It's just different in a book, and in a book you can just not care.
Right. I don't care if he's a complete asshole. Now, if my husband was a complete asshole, I always like to threaten I'm going to push him down the stairs. I have a true crime obsession and he's
Oh, so do
convinced.
I. We have to talk about that someday. I have listened
Love
to
to.
every podcast, every true crime show. I can tell you inside out everything.
I love to listen to Dateline, the podcast, as I go to bed, and he's always like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Subconscious plotting for your murder."
Yeah, I'm listening to, I think, the Piketon Massacre right now. It's a very interesting podcast.
I listened to the one about the Michigan school shooter, his parents,
Yes.
and how
I've
that
seen that, yes.
podcast, it was
Yes.
eye-opening, but I'm so glad I listened to it because, I mean, I
Yes.
spent a lot of time being angry, but that's good for me.
Yeah, there's a, I've, and it's, to me, it's more of a, it's not so much wanting the gory details, but it's the why behind it, and it's the mental aspect of it. And so I'm like, both my girls are all listen to it, and my husband's like, my gosh, she's like 14. I'm like, hey, this is giving her an awareness to what's around her. Like, don't you need to be educated on what the crazy people do in this world.
It's also critical thinking. Like you can, you see the choices people make and how they get to those moments and, but then I also watch the completely brainless secret lives of
Always.
Mormon wives, and I
Mormon. That's
think.
my next. After I finish this deadline, I have a list of shows I need, and that's one of them. But I think for, like, as an author, it gives you ideas. Like, I will write a suspense, romantic suspense one day. But for me, it's an insight into people and
Yeah.
to different, like, how people are. And so it allows me to character build
Yeah. And for
and
me,
plot.
and that's just it. I like the twists, the turns, and I think that's part of the reason I love Twist at Night so much because you gave me some of those
Thank
little
you.
breadcrumbs and how are they going to fix that? How are they going to lead that? And I have so many questions.
So do I. So it's okay. We're good.
Okay, well, we'll just have to wait until you figure them out and we can read them.
Nah, I have it's all plotted out. I'm good.
Okay, so Twisted Night is available now wherever you get books. What is next for Kay Bromberg?
Hey, Bromberg is currently writing a book. I think it's going to be about soccer. That's how far into it I am. No, I'm a big enemies to lovers. I love billionaire. I like reading billionaires, and I love sports romance. Like those are my and second chance because I don't have to build a reason why they just hop into bed all of a sudden because they've already been together. So I think I'm going to my next book I'm working on right now is sports romance. And then next year, Entangled Publishing has picked up some of my sports romances and my billionaire series, the Sin series, and they're recovering them and having them in Target and all the different stores. So I probably will write a billionaire series to spin off of the one that's going to be released, just to capitalize on that. I have so many ideas, but like the market shifts and changes so much. Like my friends who have books plotted out till 2028, I look at them and go, how? Like, what if that's not hot right then? So I kind of just wait till I finish one and then I'm like, okay, what's next? Like, I'm not good at having everything laid out because some of my best books are the ones that just take me by surprise.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me, authors that are like, I've got my whole publishing schedule ready for 2025. And I'm like, okay, but as somebody that follows the market and looks at trends and stuff like that, what are you thinking of writing? And the one author's like, well, I'll stick in my hockey world, but I think I'm going to go small town. And I'm like, okay, but if you're going to do small town, I'm going to suggest suspense, because if we look at like publishing in a whole,
Catherine, yeah.
thrillers and suspense are where it's at right now. And if you still want to stay in sports, I'm telling you, F-150 is going to have its boom.
Yeah, F1's an interesting one. It's the market's very interesting on F1, and it's very a set reader base. So that was an interesting thing to get into with my late last series I did. It's an awesome because every week there's a race, you get an automatic boost, which is no one's complaining about that. But you're also in a very small niche, which some people don't like.
And it is a more global reach versus just a
For
stateside scene.
for international publishing, yes.
Kay, thank you so much for hanging out and
Thank you for
joining me.
having me.
Of course. Until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.